This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for March 10th, 2010. We're going to have an update today on legislation that would limit the abuses of solitary confinement in Maine's prisons, and we'll also have a special showcase of Outside the Box, a short feature that normally airs on Tuesday mornings here on WERU. But first, we invite you, ask you, urge you, and encourage you to go to your phones and call 1-800-643-6273 and make a donation in whatever amount that represents your commitment to helping keep media independent. We are free of corporate influence because we depend on our community to help keep us going. Again, the number is 1-800-643-6273. There'll be a drawing at 6 o'clock. We'll tell you what we'll be having that drawing for a little bit later, but all the names of folks who call in this two-hour block will go in the watering can for that drawing. Again, 1-800-643-6273. We'll be back a little bit later to thank you. And as I said, we've been reporting on legislation that would limit abuses of solitary confinement here in Maine's prisons. We're going to start today with a report back from a public hearing that was held on February 17th regarding that legislation. Megan LaSala is a reporter also for WMPG, the University of Southern Maine's radio station, and she contributes this report.
On Wednesday, February 17th, the Maine Legislature's Criminal Justice Committee held a public hearing for LD 1611, a bill to ensure the humane treatment of Maine's prisoners in solitary confinement. Currently, inmates placed in the Special Management Unit, or SMU, are kept isolated in a cell, often for 23 hours a day, with no human contact except with correctional staff. With 29 testimonies in favor of the bill and 14 against, the hearing lasted over 9 hours, ending after 10 p.m. Representative Jim Schatz, a Democrat from Blue Hill who sponsored the bill, claimed in his testimony that the legislation will bring elements of due process, oversight, and scrutiny to the special management unit environment.
The passing of this bill will allow Maine citizens to be more informed and certain that what takes place in our institutions is consistent with our values as human beings and the need to return offenders to their communities as productive citizens.
If passed, the bill will limit the number of days an inmate could spend in an SMU to 45. The bill would also limit the use of restraints and prohibit use of the SMU for inmates with severe mental illness. During his testimony, Corrections Commissioner Martin Magnuson criticized the bill for too broadly defining the term mentally ill.
Most individuals who enter the criminal justice system experience some level of psychiatric distress. Yet this does not mean they meet the criteria of having a serious mental illness. Misrepresentation would, in fact, divert treatment resources from those prisoners in our system with true mental illness.
According to Emily Posner of the grassroots organization Mainers Against the Use of Solitary Confinement, the public hearing is part of the process that is still many steps away from creating new language for correctional policies.
The public hearing was just an opportunity for residents of the state of Maine, anyone from the public, their opportunity to come and comment in a public setting about the bill. We still have a lot of work to do before final language would even be proposed to the House of Representatives. As of right now, our policies are not law, so if the policies are broken by the department, there's no recourse that can be done. So for me, really, the first step is implementing actual law, putting into statute a very clear review process that abides by and upholds the due process clause that's in the Constitution. So this bill is trying to address those constitutional problems that exist.
On Friday, February 26th, the committee will go into a working session to weigh the testimonies given at the public hearing and consider possible amendments to the bill. For WMPG News, I'm Megan LaSala.
Our thanks to Megan LaSala for contributing that report back from the hearing that was held on February 17th. More recently, Meredith DeFrancesco checked in with Shanna Bellows regarding this issue.
We have with us today the Executive Director of the Maine Civil Liberties Union, Shanna Bellows. Welcome to the program.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
So if you could give us a layout and some more detail on the current status of the Bill 1611, which is being considered by the Maine Legislature, that's addressing solitary confinement, an act to ensure humane treatment of special management unit prisoners.
That's right. This bill is very important for
two primary reasons. Currently in Maine, there are over 100 prisoners in the special management unit. In that special management unit, they are isolated for 23 hours a day with no contact with other human beings except the passage of the guards. The lights are on 24 hours a day. When they are released for 1 hour, they exercise alone in the cage. This has been shown by psychiatrists and psychologists to be extremely damaging insofar as it creates mental illness where none previously existed, and it exacerbates existing mental illness in prisoners. The Department of Corrections recently presented to the Criminal Justice Committee and to the Maine Civil Liberties Union data regarding the prisoners in the Maine State Prison and their confinement. In that response to questions from the MCLU, the department confirmed that 48% of prisoners in the special management unit are on psychotropic medications. To me, that is astonishing, that prisoners do have mental illness for which they are being prescribed medication, and yet they are being housed in these conditions that national experts agree are extremely harmful. The commissioner went on to say that dozens of these prisoners have been released straight from the special management unit to our community. And that also is problematic when you don't have any sort of program that emphasizes rehabilitation or reentry. You're releasing people who've been in very terrible conditions back into the community, and they are more likely to recidivate.
How often is solitary confinement used in Maine that we're aware of?
Well, yesterday we received data from the commissioner just about prisoners over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that data reported that there, and this is over the last 6 months, that there were 97 prisoners who were placed in special management unit for 1 to 5 days. Now, we don't necessarily have a problem with a temporary confinement in isolation. The data demonstrates that it's the prolonged maintenance and isolation that's problematic. The commissioner detailed data, an additional 126 prisoners, so you're talking a total of 200 prisoners, were there up to 10 days. An additional 86 up to 15 days. And when we look at this, seven prisoners have been in the special management unit for over a year, according to the data that was supplied to us based on the last 6 months. In total, it appears that there were over 300 prisoners in the last 6 months who spent time in solitary.
And LD 1611, again, is being endorsed by the Maine Psychological Association and the Maine Association of Psychiatric Physicians as well. Can you talk about some of the data that's out there that's being discussed, particularly in the context of how this could be classified as torture or definitely a human rights infringement?
Absolutely. There was a New Yorker article that I definitely recommend people trying to read titled Hellhole by Dr. Gawande. It ran in March of 2009. And he describes in more detail what happens to prisoners when they're in prolonged isolation and the manifestation of symptoms of mental illness. You, again, according to the psychiatric and psychological experts, prolonged isolation leads to behaviors like cutting, like throwing of feces, like violent behavior, including self-mutilation and attempts to hurt self. So these isolation, prolonged isolation in itself, leads to more violent and harmful behaviors. And this was testified to by Dr. Stuart Grassian in the hearing that the Criminal Justice Committee held on solitary confinement.
And can you, and I know you could go into more detail on that, but can we talk specifically about what this bill proposes to do? It's, again, an act to ensure humane treatment of special management unit prisoners, directly addressing solitary confinement, a bill sponsored by Representative Jim Schatz of Blue Hill and supported by a coalition of organizations in Maine. Can you talk about those points that it specifically it would address and where the status of the bill is?
Sure. So the bill has been revised twice now. In its current form, the bill does two very important things. First, it prohibits the confinement of the seriously mentally ill, and that is defined in the statute, from placement in the special management unit. The prison has a secure mental health unit. This was a unit that we at the MCLU were very much involved in having opened. The secure mental health unit is a unit that is a higher security unit for prisoners who, for one reason or another, might not be safe in the general population. But the unit has several amenities that make it a more humane unit. The prisoners can see one another. They can converse with one another, even though they have individual cells. They have access to a television at all times. They have access, plentiful access, to reading materials. And they have regular group sessions with mental health clinicians that are very important in helping them deal with issues like anger management and the like. So we believe that if a prisoner has a serious mental illness, that prisoner should be placed in the secure mental health unit. It's not appropriate for that prisoner to be in the other units, this other special management units, because it will exacerbate their mental illness. So the bill has a prohibition on the placement of the seriously mentally ill in special management. It further requires regular mental health evaluations. Sometimes what happens is if a prisoner has been previously diagnosed with a mental illness, they may be referred to the secure mental health unit. But if a prisoner is showing behaviors that might be associated with mental illness, but might be interpreted by the guard as threatening or unsafe to the prisoner or to others, that prisoner may not have had a previous diagnosis of mental illness, may be manifesting some of the signs of mental illness, and not receive an evaluation when placed in a special management unit. So our bill would require an evaluation, and we believe that evaluation should be performed by someone who's qualified to do that evaluation, like a psychiatrist. And then the bill requires that there be regular evaluations to ensure that if prisoners do, in the special management unit, do demonstrate mental illness, that they are then transferred out of the special management unit, either into the secure mental health unit or back into the general population, but get the care that they need. So that's the very first and I think possibly the most important aspect of this bill. The mentally ill should not be in solitary confinement. A second and vital piece of the bill are due process requirements. If, you know, there are three ways in which a prisoner may be confined to what's called the special management unit or solitary confinement according to the Department of Corrections policies. They may be placed in solitary confinement for disciplinary reasons. And generally, if the special management unit is for disciplinary purposes, that's for a very limited time. It's for, under current policies, allegedly under 30 days. Now, some prisoners have reported to us that they have been held for longer than that as punishment. But there are two other types, one called high-risk segregation, and the other deemed administrative segregation. Now, with administrative segregation, prisoners are being placed in the same cell block. They're being placed in the same conditions of isolation and lack of access to privileges. And they're that is done at the discretion of prison personnel. There is no due process. There is no ability for the prisoner to appeal why he or she has been placed in that special management unit. And there's no clear-cut steps for the prisoner to then be released back in the general population. So we believe that it is punitive to be deprived of your rights, to be placed in isolation or solitary confinement for 23 to 24 hours a day. And therefore, there must be due process rights for those prisoners.
And so, also, another aspect of the bill is creating an oversight body?
The bill would require, thank you for pointing that out, the bill would require oversight as well. And we do think that that is really important. One of the challenging things with this legislation is when we first embarked on this, we solicited data from the prison thinking that we would get that immediately, thinking that it was probably data that they kept on a regular basis. And to our surprise, it took weeks to get that data. We received it at the work session of the Criminal Justice Committee. And that concerns me. I think that the prison should be able to tell people fairly quickly how many individuals are in the SMU and for how long they've been there. So what this legislation requires is an annual review. The Board of Visitors for each correctional facility will conduct a comprehensive review of the policies, standards, and treatment of special management prisoners to determine the effectiveness of those policies and standards. And that board shall include those findings in a report to the Joint Standing Committee of Legislature.
And not to rush you along, but just to hit on, is the current bill also addressing the brutal forms of restraint?
Originally, the bill prohibited the use of the restraint chair, which I agree is brutal. The most recently amended version eliminates that language because of pushback from legislators who are not ready to entirely ban the restraint chair.
Are there other aspects of the bill that have been had to been laid aside at this point, or other aspects of the bill that you want to accentuate?
The other piece of the bill that has been put aside this year is the issue of transfer of prisoners to out-of-state facilities. So at this point, the bill really focuses on the plight of mentally ill prisoners. You know, everyone, even prisoners, deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. We need to ensure that those who are in our care in the prisons exit prison better than they entered prison. And most of the prisoners in the main state prison are going to be released back into the community. It's a matter of not only human rights, but also our community safety, that we ensure that these prisoners are receiving adequate and humane treatment.
And where does the bill stand right now?
The bill has gone through a public hearing as well as one work session before the Criminal Justice Committee. The Criminal Justice Committee is reconvening for an additional work session. The status of the bill is unclear. There has been a tremendous amount of opposition from the Department of Corrections. If people believe, as we do, that solitary confinement is a human rights issue, I strongly encourage folks to be reaching out to members of the Criminal Justice Committee and members of the larger legislature. It's just so important that the legislature hear from constituents. And if you see Jim Schatz, take the time to say thank you. Representative Jim Schatz has been the champion of this bill. He's done an amazing job. We're very pleased that he took this on.
And we'll be following up on this issue, as particularly Amy Brown has been covering it before this program as well. We're going to have to leave it at that. Shenna Bellows, the Executive Director of the Maine Civil Liberties Union, talking with us today about the currently contemplated legislation before Maine looking at limitations on solitary confinement. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure.
And that's Radioactive for today. Radioactive is a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco, and today with contribution from Megan LaSala from WMPG in Portland, Maine. We're going to end a little bit early today to showcase Outside the Box, a short feature that normally airs on Tuesday mornings at 7:30 during the Morning Maine program. This is Larry Danziger's short feature, Outside the Box, and as soon as it's over, please go to your phones and show your support for independent media by calling 1-800-643-6273.
Welcome to the Good Money edition of Outside the Box. Today's topic is change, not charity. Have you ever wanted to be like Robin Hood, taking money from the rich and giving to those who really need it? Taking from the rich is often simple. For example, we can boycott wealthy corporations and individuals just by not using their products and services. And giving to those who can really use it? That's easy, too. The needs in nonprofit groups are endless. The real question is, how can we give in a way that contributes to long-term solutions and makes the greatest impact with our dollars? One way to look at giving is to distinguish between change and charity, a distinction offered by a group called Changemakers. They describe charity as being short-term, reactive to immediate needs, individually given, and distributed through social service agencies. The result is that people and communities continue to be dependent on the charity because the problems are still there. They define change-based giving, on the other hand, as directed to long-term solutions to problems, proactive, promoting collective organizing and responses, and distributed through social change organizations to create independent, empowered people and communities. Probably most of us do need help at some time in our lives, and there is a role for charity. But change can reduce or eliminate the need for charity. Most of you listening to this feature, like me, have limited money you can give away, so we all have to pick and choose. For example, I could give a donation to help a child in Haiti or India, or I could give to a self-help development project in one of those countries, run by those in need themselves. I could give money to buy toys for children whose parents can't afford them during the December holidays. Or, I could support a group working for living wages or doing labor organizing so the parents could buy those toys themselves. How about a telethon raising money for people with disabilities? Well, I could support that, but I might rather donate to a disability rights group working to make more buildings accessible. Lots of people give money for cancer research, but how about money to toxics action groups trying to clean up polluted sites so people don't get cancer from the waste? And what about projects trying to slow and reverse global climate change or trying to stop countries from overusing their resources? Lots of money goes for homeless shelters, but I could give instead to projects building affordable housing so we could empty the shelters. Or how about helping anti-poverty groups press the federal government for more Section 8 housing, where residents pay based on a percentage of their income? Supporting a scholarship fund would help one or several students attend college. But I could donate to a student association or education group advocating more affordable higher education for all. There's a lot of hunger, even in our state, so someone would benefit if I donated to a food pantry. But instead, I could support groups working for local food self-sufficiency or food co-op development or adequate income and living wages for all. And finally, I could donate to public radio, which focuses on what the charity world is doing. but instead, I give to community radio because it tells me about the world of change, not charity. Do you believe more in change than charity? If so, I hope you'll donate to community radio too. I'm Larry Danziger, urging you to call the station right now and pledge your support. Here's the number to call, 1-800-643-6273.